Heute gibt es eine besondere Folge On the Way to New Work, bei der ich selbst leider nicht dabei sein konnte. Michael hat uns vertreten auf dem Vitra Roundtable. Das Ganze hat stattgefunden bereits vor Corona und Social Distancing, also nicht wundern über diese große Runde. Es ist eine wirklich coole Runde. Julia Erdmann ist Stadtplanerin und Architektin mit einem völlig neuen Ansatz zum Thema Arbeitsplatz. Jay Oscarby, den ihr schon gehört habt, bei uns den Industriedesigner und Architekten. Dann haben wir dabei die EOS-Managerin Lara Fleming, die sich als Chefin abgeschafft hat. Und Uli Weinberg, der Professor für Design Thinking am Hasso-Plattner-Institut ist. Also wirklich eine geballte Ladung on the way to new work. Und da wir natürlich wissen, dass die Phase jetzt aktuell speziell und sehr besonders ist, wollen Michael und ich nochmal eine Sache teilen. Wir hatten das bereits in unserem Livestream gemacht für Firmen, die sagen, hey, wie sollten wir uns jetzt gerade neu orientieren und aufstellen? Ich habe mit der Firma Apinio, bei der Michael auch beteiligt ist, tatsächlich für uns bei Blackboard gesagt, wir machen eine kurze Befragung. Das geht innerhalb von einem Tag. Was wollen unsere Kunden momentan? Wie wird im Homeoffice gearbeitet? Wie können wir dabei helfen? Und wir hatten innerhalb von einem Tag die Antworten. Und ich hatte versprochen, im Livestream diese Erfahrung nochmal zu teilen. Also beispielsweise kam dabei raus, mit wie viel Tools zu Hause gearbeitet wird, hauptsächlich E-Mail und WhatsApp. Echt krass. Also mit welchem hohen Anteil. Und auch, dass über 18 Millionen Deutsche gerade von zu Hause aus arbeiten. Das war alles eben aus der Studie von Apinio. Wirklich cool. Danke nochmal an das Team dort, was uns unterstützt hat. Und vielleicht ein kleiner Hinweis und Idee für alle, die jetzt sagen, wie machen wir mit Werbung gerade weiter. Jetzt viel Spaß mit dem Roundtable und Michael in der Runde. Und ich verabschiede mich für diese Folge.
When I came to Beijing, I had the kind of heureka moment, because I was thinking, wow, that I was remembered to when we do projects with professionals and there is the boss coming in that group and he's part of the team. Usually what happens is the boss is moving to the short part of the rectangle.
It's the hierarchy
table. Yeah. And I was looking at the circle and I was saying, oh, there's no chance for a hierarchical position. And I was immediately on the way back, I started already thinking about what is an interesting shape for us.
Can I just say one thing?
And then
there's one. If you're only 1.65 meters, there's a hierarchy when you stand up. I love sitting down.
I think there are solutions. we can talk.
You love sitting down.
Can I add something?
Just to end that, and then I was coming back and talking to System 180, the little company doing the furniture and we were thinking of the form, which is not a circle. Circle is not, you know, this is if you put two circles together, you have holes, and so we want to group it. And then we were sitting in a Buckminster Fuller dome somehow, and I was looking at the top, and the top was a hexagon, the center part. And I was saying, this is the table. This is the table we need. And so we built a prototype of the hexagon table, and the hexagon has six short ends. So every boss feels very comfortable because there's a short end. You know. And the other five feel like, oh, we are part of a circle.
Yeah. They're all bosses. Yeah. Everyone's a boss.
Gleich geht's los mit On the Way to New Work. Unser Werbepartner heute ist Vodafone, ganz präzise ein Podcast von Vodafone. Der nennt sich Digitale Vorreiter, powered by Vodafone. Und da geht es darum, dass Digitalisierung von Experten erklärt wird. Das Ganze wird gehostet von Christoph Bursek, der fragt eben Gründer von erfolgreichen Digitalmodellen nach Tipps und Erfolgsstrategien. Das heißt, ihr bekommt digitale Geschäftsmodelle erklärt von den Machern selbst und wie Herausforderungen gelöst werden. Ich kann auf jeden Fall ein wenig teilen, denn ich wurde selber bereits einmal befragt zum Thema New Work und den Herausforderungen, die Führungskräfte jetzt haben und warum ich glaube, dass offene Kommunikation und auch die Tools dazu so wahnsinnig wichtig sind. Und das Gespräch war wirklich großartig mit Christoph, hat sehr viel Spaß gemacht. Wir haben das Ganze remote durchgeführt, wie sich das für die aktuelle Situation natürlich gehört. Und kann nur sagen, also wirklich ein Deep Dive, auch für mich nochmal Dinge rauszunehmen beim Erzählen, selber auch darüber nachzudenken, was muss man alles wissen, wenn man jetzt zum Beispiel auch mit Kollegen zum Thema Digitalwissen sich austauscht. Also, das gibt's jeden Montag, spannende Business Cases, Inspiration, alles zum Reindenken in das digitale Thema. Und da kann ich nur empfehlen, dass ihr wirklich mal reinguckt, sei es von E-Health bis E-Commerce, wirklich sehr, sehr breit. Jeden Montag gibt es das Ganze überall dort, wo ihr Podcasts hört, zum Beispiel Spotify oder Apple, einfach digitale Vorreiter, powered by Vodafone. Und los geht's. Und jetzt geht's weiter mit On the Way to New Work.
Ich werde mich jetzt ab sofort nicht mehr in meiner Muttersprache bewegen. Ich hatte in Englisch immer schlechte Noten. Ich bitte, das nachzusehen. Wir sind hier 4 Deutsche, aber wir haben einen Gast aus London.
Sorry.
Jay, what is your German, your German sentence you can say?
The only thing I can say in German is, ich bin 13 Jahre alt.
Genau, deswegen...
And gegenüber der Fahrrad.
Ja, okay.
And Gummibaum.
Okay. Good. So we switch over to English, and I think my English is easy enough that you can follow it. And Jay, yeah, we had this fantastic podcast session, so you're so kind to speak in a way that we all understand you, so it will be. And if there's someone who does not get it, you can say, well, can you say it again or whatever. So we have a place free here. Here's a microphone. Whenever someone feels to be part of this group, he's allowed to come here, to sit here, to take the microphone, to ask a question. If it's too much and someone says, well, I don't want this guy or this lady to sit there, he can come, tip on his shoulder, and then we can switch it through. You don't have to, but you're allowed to during our talk, and then we will open up after the conversation here so that we involve you. I think it's called fishbowl. It's part of new work. Okay, so we start, Jay, with our guest from London. We're sitting here on this crazy system. I'm sitting here since hours. I'm happy.
The bus hasn't arrived.
The bus hasn't arrived. I already pre-ordered it for me. I will have this in my house because I love it so much. What kind of observations and insights has led to such a product?
First of all, I just wanted to say thank you to everybody for coming along, and thank Vitra for inviting us here. It's quite difficult being a designer today because there's obviously a temptation and a compulsion to produce new things all the time because it's like our job. But we at Barbara Osgoode don't really find that so exciting or challenging. And the thing that we try and do where we can is trying to find gaps, find something that's missing in the way that society is changing or work is changing. And through our architecture practice, we were engaged by the Ace Hotel, which is an American brand, for their first hotel in London. We did the hotel in London, and we created the lobby space for them, thinking that the residents would, stay in the lobby space, they'd read the newspaper, they'd phone their family, and blah, blah, blah. And we were shocked at what happened. In the whole of the ground floor of this hotel became like the middle of the Venn diagram between Shoreditch and the hotel. And it wasn't the guests, it was people who were spending £3 on a coffee, millions of pounds a year on coffee, but working there on these kind of strange collection of sofas that we'd put in there, eclectic sofas, which were comfortable for 15 minutes, but not comfortable for all day. And of course, people were working on laptops and smartphones and charging them with cables going everywhere. So it was a health hazard. It was chaos. It was a mess. But it was obvious that we needed to make something for that environment, the environment of the new freelance economy, the people who are lonely at home and who want colleagues, but who want to be able to sit at a chair height so you can pull a table up and have a colleague here, something that had integrated power. It was, it was like a eureka moment of the brief that we needed to fulfill. So we went to Vitra with this kind of brief. And as you can see on the wall, actually, you can see how we created a system like Lego that hopefully answers those problems. And that's, so the inspiration really came from the observation of chaos.
Yeah, I like the other example. I would love you to tell it as well. It's the Tiptone, a chair.
Yeah.
I think it was your first collaboration with
Tiptone. We have one somewhere, but I don't know if you have seen it. It's like a plastic chair that has 2 seating positions. And that, again, was another eureka moment where we were designing a chair for education. And we observed that the way that I was taught at school was to sort of sit like this and copy things from the blackboard. Like the teacher would write down, you copy it down, you didn't really move. But the way that kids are taught now is much more like WeWork. You know, it's project-based, it's collaborative, people move around. And we realized that there was no furniture for that way of being or way of learning because we don't have to sit still anymore. In fact, it's really bad to sit still. You need to move so that you can think. I'm sounding like a kind of advert or like the, it's like the shopping channel, aren't I? But we discovered that, you know, we could create a chair that had movement with no mechanism. That was kind of it. So yeah. Again, it was like, eureka.
Cool. Very nice. So what do you expect from the perfect office? Julia, what is your expectation?
Well, my expectation for the perfect office is diversity. I think I change my locations and also the ways of standing, seating, relaxing at least 10 times a day. Mm-hmm. So you can say every hour of the day I work kind of in a different mood. So my ideal setting is the surrounding that offers possibilities for different kinds of movements. Mm-hmm. And actually, yeah, I'm the most happy if I have a variety of choices, which I can find in a room, in a space. But more often, I really find it somewhere in the city, mm-hmm. like in the Ace Hotel lobby, for example.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lara, what is your ideal office?
Well, my ideal office also fits different requirements of tasks I'm doing. And I think the former very traditional office with having little boxes where you sit 2 to 5 people, whatever it is, and then you have the floors and everything, they simply don't suit the requirements we have on different tasks. We have creative work, we have administrative work, we have, you know, we have small teams working together, we have times where you work on your own, you have big groups that need to have an environment that can really be creative and develop ideas, and therefore you need, and this is why where I'm agreeing with you, diversity. You really need different spaces. You need sofas just as much as tables, as little boxes, little whatever it is. You need screens, you need technique, or not, maybe sometimes not. And therefore, I also would agree saying you need different working environments within one office. That's ideal. And that's what we, for example, trying to do.
Uli, when you started with D-School, you found out there is no such furniture on the marketplace and you created it on your own. Is it right?
Yes, we had to, actually. It was a crazy situation because I was thinking that large furniture companies like Vitra or Steelcase or whatever,
Who are they?
Yeah. You know,
we don't like them.
Far away.
Okay.
Far away. And I was actually asking, that is 13 years ago, I was desperately trying to find furniture for collaboration. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking that there must be something. And I had seen that at Stanford D School, our partner institution, they were experimenting with their kind of prototyping things. And I found out there's nothing available on the market. So we had, in very fast forward mode, because we wanted to open the school, we had to build our own furniture. 8 tables, actually, at that time, and some whiteboards for collaboration. And it turned out that this is now a design thinking line. We had to build more and more and more because it started quite late that the large corporations were realizing, wow, we have to do something. We have to move away from the kind of traditional way of seating people in little offices and make it a little bit comfortable. And now we have our own furniture, and I'm really happy to be here now as and see that there is huge companies moving in that direction and make it even more comfortable. I like that couch, you know.
Really. Well, I think the way you did on that, I didn't realize until today that work was from your studio. I think it's really excellent. It's really, really good. Yeah. But you're right, sometimes the companies don't see because they're too engaged in what they're doing day to day, and it takes the external point of view, which is why they work with us, right, to see the change that's happening.
Yeah, it was interesting that then, I think it was 3 years ago, we got first time visitors from that American company, you know, I don't mm-hmm. Steelcase, right? And it was so interesting to learn from them that they were approaching us. They were asking, we see that you are that you were building this kind of things, that you have a lot of experience now, and we actually had. And so we started to think of how could that inspire you as a corporation? And I think there is a high learning curve. Actually, what we did, you're talking about diversity. We figured out we are talking about zones. You know, we found out that that you need for different parts of your work time during the day, you need different zones. And what we did from the very beginning, we did something which is probably not that suitable to the office, to a work environment, because we were focusing completely on the collaboration. We were mm-hmm. saying everything of, so WeQ, the we qualities is in the focus, not the IQ. We were doing this on purpose because we were setting up a learning environment and we wanted to make students learn that collaboration is much more important than individual competition. And so we kind of defined something which there is no flip chart, for example. Flip chart is an eye tool, get rid of it, you know, throw it out. And sometimes you still need it, but in our environment, if you go there, you have a hard time to find a quiet place for making a phone call. So people are asking us, where is that place? It's not there. But in an office environment, of course, you need that. But even in that just WeQ environment, we need four different zones, we found out. And you need much more, many more if you want to incorporate the IQ, which we, of course, mm-hmm. need in a big environment. But I think the focus of Vitra, for example, now listening to you guys recently, is more and more the WeQ aspects of work, not the IQ that much anymore. And I think that is the future. I think it has to move in that direction.
You had a transformation of your department and your company, and as we all know, new work is more than the office. I mean, the office is a crucial point, but you have to bring life into this. You have to change the way you work. You have to think about leadership in a way. Maybe you can give us a little insight in your transformation, your personal transformation project.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, there are tons of aspects to it. So just stop me when
I will,
whatever I tell you is boring, because maybe, you know, just to explain what we did is that we changed from a very classical, traditional, corporate, hierarchical structure in my team, you know, having the organigram and everything, to a network which is formed of competence circles, let's say, or competence fields. So we canceled all the old disciplines coming from internal communication, external communication, classical marketing, e-marketing, research, whatever it is. We you know, got rid of all those and identified new competence areas in which we needed to become better. And we didn't do the change for the sake of it, but because everyone knows that we are all probably more or less confronted with a very quickly changing world in terms of digitization, globalization, individualization, etc. So I had external needs to change my ways of working in order to fulfill my job, and of course also internal needs to change because the expectations of my employees, of my staff, are changing as well. So we have different tasks on the one hand and different requirements, and we have the expectations of people towards their working place. And therefore, we had a drastic change from in terms of leadership, because we separated disciplinary leaders leading from professional decision making. So we have self-organized, agile teams now that are empowered to take their own decisions without the old bottleneck of hierarchy, which is me in that respect. And in doing so, we also had to think, what's the difference now in how we actually collaborate? How do we actually work together? We needed a different space. And therefore, we have this aspects of how do we work and what does it do to our ways of actually sitting, standing, having desks, or having to, you know, areas where we need to work differently. Also, we noticed that the line between private life and professional life is a very fine line today, and we needed to change the situation for well-being in our offices as well. Today, we work in a shared desk system, as you just said. We have 10% less desks or areas to work in than I have people in my team. One is actually with me today.
You say it's bullshit what she says?
Yeah, maybe you come later.
Or
and we sit together every day in a different situation, which made a huge difference to us. We have a rather holistic view on the entire department now. Not everyone is doing just their job, their task, and when they did it well, and then they were like, oh, now I did a fine job. No, today it's really a learning organization, learning from each other, exchanging, collaborating. And what I'm doing is I really have to strictly remind everyone in a very, very short-term way of the goals and the strategy we have, so they can, of course, empowered as they are, fulfill their jobs. So I do the framework. My mission is to make an environment in which everyone can do their job well, feeling well, developing in the best way they can according to their talents and their ambitions. And this has a lot to do with actually sitting, working, having space around them.
Did you had a look on the Holacracy system, or what was it?
Absolutely. Actually, yeah. I went to and I watched. I went to Las Vegas to Zappos, and I was able to talk to the CEO and everything, and that was extremely fascinating, because very often I hear, okay, you know, you have a team of 25 people, that's easy, you know, and they're all young and they're all whatever they are, but so of course then you can make changes, but I have all this old gang and, you know, they're not used to change, they don't want to be different, they don't want to work differently, they're used to what they have. And the average age in my team with 25 people is 39, which I don't think is, you know, extremely young. I'm not young.
I think it's extremely young.
Very young.
It's not extremely young, it's younger than I am, but that's a different issue. And therefore, it's a mindset thing.
Yeah.
And this is what we have been working on for the last 2 years, actually, now, to really change our mindset, working as a team, thinking and acting in different ways. And it's a fascinating process, to be honest. I've learned more than the 10 years before, I must admit. I don't enjoy admitting it, but I think it is that case. And it's a fascinating road we're traveling along, and I can only recommend trying out. You have to be very generous with yourself, because me as a manager, for the very first time in years now, I have so many more questions than answers. And I'm cultivated in a system where I have to give answers and not ask back. But this is actually quite crucial for today's work, I think. And to admit that you learn yourself and that you're only part of the team. Actually, I don't have my own office anymore either. I sit on the entire space we have also, which I love. I'm not sure about my team, but I love it. Yeah, so it's so many different aspects to it.
Thanks for sharing. It was not too long, so thank you very much. What's with the rest of the gang? What are your experiences with new work methods? Is it already in your companies? Do you expect changes? Did you have changes over the last years, Jay? Maybe.
Well, I think we've, in a way, I guess the things that we've designed in are probably contradicted by the way that we work in probably in a really old way. Because I'm of the age where we only just got computers when I was at college, so for drawing. So I graduated still drawing by hand, and
me too.
Really, yeah, I know.
Shh. Where's your pencil? You always have your pencil in your hand.
I have got it somewhere. I had it. It's here.
There is. Yeah.
I dropped it.
I have the other one.
What was I going to say? So our process is quite old-fashioned. We still draw by hand. We make models. I mean, our team interprets the sketches and they become real things, of course. But I like that. I don't want to learn how to draw on the computer particularly, because I don't really think it's part of what my job is, really. I think what I observe is the way that work has changed forever, because, you know, the two things that I talk about specifically about soft work are the kind of the perfect storm that was caused by the recession and the kind of acceleration of the freelancer economy, and technology, which enables us to send emails from anywhere, including the toilet. You know, where you can work wherever and whenever you want, and that led to a lot of lonely freelancers in the window of Starbucks. You know, and it's our job as designers to accommodate change and create objects to bring people together. Because I think the workplace is, for me, it's really about a place of collaboration. You know, under the roof of the society that you belong to and you feel proud to belong to. But once you've established that, you can then go out into the world and still feel like you belong to the society. Work is a place for communication and collaboration, really.
Yeah. Julia, you had the ultimate chance to do everything new because you just started your own company. So what's new?
Yes, actually, this was really a different situation than yours, starting completely new. And I always observed certain things. And now when I founded Yes, I had the chance to really test this. And it was an idea and an ideal idea. And now 3 years later, I can say it turned out way much more better than I would ever have imagined. And I think we do everything quite new. And also maybe a next step, what you probably know within one organization where you are in the same building every day. So I would say what you did in the organization is I founded Yes as a network, or more as an, you can say, ecosystem, where we are like all organisms, very well connected, and everyone is connected, and we come together when there is a certain project. So all the people, they engage, they are always in the flow. Every day is different, and everyone comes together project-based, mm-hmm. or on a certain purpose or on a certain ambitions. And that's why it's so important that the working environment also gives the framework for that. And we have a studio, we have a place where we can all meet, and it's also our meeting place. But I always say it's not only the desk is dead, but for us also the office is dead. And, or take it in another way, is the city is our office.
Yeah.
So Yes has certain spaces in Hamburg, and also where all our other projects are. And we use so many different spaces throughout the city. And this offers such a great freedom. So every week, all of our team meet, and let's say one day we meet in our studio, which is in Hammerbrook in Hamburg. But the next day we meet at a client's space, and then we work there for the day. Then we start maybe with three persons, then two or three more come. Last week we did a very intense thing, and we worked with 12 persons on that project, which was also in a designated project space for that. So we are always connected through technology. This would not have been possible 10 years ago, but now we have everything, all our files, everything in our phone, actually. Yeah. So we really do not need any very, very little hardware. So we are very able to meet everywhere and to collaborate everywhere. And that is really the new chance that we have now in our days, and I think this will continue also in the future, that it gives us really more freedom.
We will come back to the role of a city or a region later. Uli, now it's your chance to explain why design thinking can help to give us all better working environments, better results, and more fun at work.
Actually, I'm right now a little bit jealous about you guys. You know, you all have this kind of great environments. You can build it from scratch, and you have to imagine we are a part of a university with different departments, University of Potsdam, and there's the HBI, it's an IT institute, and yes, there's Hasso Plattner behind it, the co-founder of SAP, he's driving something, but he's still, if I look at what is happening at our place, it's still like this kind of Brockhaus structure, very strict, and we are a kind of weird thing in that strict structure, and actually we have to fight, and that is what I see also with a lot of organizations, that there are people driving change, but there is the bigger organization and it's saying, why do we need that change, we are so successful, you know, and
you can make more money.
How can you prove that? No. And that's, on one hand, it's a challenge, you know, to see that. On the other hand, it's also kind of good in to be in that situation. But I remember I changed my office like 3 years ago. Actually, one thing, we were building the 8 tables for the students, stand-up tables on wheels for 5-6 people, perfect meeting tables. But we didn't use it because we were building it for, they just had 8 of them. And it took us probably as a team, probably 1.5 years to think of, oh, we can exchange our meeting tables and use the student tables for that. And so step by step, we did that. But it took a while that we understood, yeah, our work environment is a traditional one. It's nice leather couches and this, but it's actually not really helpful in that time. So we changed that. And that was a big step for us some years ago. But I had my professor office, you know, yeah, I was a professor, you get a big office and had a small front office. And like 3 years ago, I was saying to my assistant, I'm traveling all the time, so I just need a little booth for making phone calls. So let's switch the offices. And so she has now the big office, and there are 2 others, and there's a nice coffee place, and there's a meeting place. It's great. I have a little booth, and it's perfect. I love it. And then my boss, our director, who is in Davos right now, so I can talk about it. And he was stepping by and looking at that, and you don't need to do that. You know, it's probably not a good idea to, you're the professor, you know, you need that kind of...
But I think you're tackling, right, the issue behind it, because this is all about status. Your work is yeah. really, you know, sort of endangering old structures, and that they are about power, status. And people in my company, which is probably as financial service or as traditional as universities, maybe not just as much, but pretty much that much, people are afraid, especially the management, the hierarchy, to lose status.
Yeah,
and therefore, they don't want to change. But yeah. actually, I'm quite optimistic because I'm a little island within the company myself with my little team. But, you know, change is starting everywhere a little bit. And at some point, you get this sort of critical mass. And then change will not, it doesn't go away again. I think we're now at the turning point, I don't know whether or not you agree, in which we do realize, and everyone starts to realize, this internet thing and this digitization and all these trends, they don't go away anymore. And therefore, they have to adapt and become a responsive organization in some sort. And maybe we're not just as at the turning point, but almost,
I think so,
don't you agree?
I agree that it's just another evolution. So the technology is just there. I mean, nobody can now not use it. It surrounds us everywhere, and it makes us very, very mobile and active. Everyone, we do not even have to write emails. We can speak them.
Yeah, so, the next generation.
And everyone knows this.
Yeah. Doesn't have the same expectations towards status and working and you know, a career. That's different. They have different expectations. What is a career? Yeah. And they enjoy having the freedom you talked about of being able to work from home office and everything. And I have, to be honest, I have from 25 people, we have 4 men and the rest is women. And I so much enjoy giving them...
I would not like that.
Giving them
not diverse,
the option to work from everywhere, because then even more they can really get the career they deserve and according to their ambitions and talents, because they're flexible. And this is, for me, the greatest thing about it, that now, you know, we don't have those walls anymore that keep talented people who have different issues in their life to deal with, to work in a perfect manner and collaborate via technology, teams, or whatever it is. So therefore,
I just wanted to try the last thing to answer your question with the pointing on design thinking. That is adding to what you were saying. What we figured out. So now we started with a little floor with 8 tables. Now we have, I think, about 3,000 square meters filled up with furniture, with collaboration spaces, and all so several floors. And the interesting thing was, at the beginning, it was just, we are the design thinking department. We are one department within that department-based system. So, and they were saying, so we we are the IT guys. We don't move to that place. But through the last years, we found out whenever there is no workshop running at our space, and there's a big one right next to my office. And at the beginning, it was empty. So there was no design thinking workshop, so it was empty. But now the IT student figured out, oh, there's an interesting place to go to, you know, and we could meet there and we could join forces and we could visually describe our IT problems. And now, if there's no workshop, it's crowded with students. A side impact of design thinking. So they're not design thinking students, they're just IT students being in the other part of the organizations, but they figure out we have to work in a different way. And we don't want to be stuck in that kind of office in front of our computer. And the interesting thing is, they are most of the time they're not using computers. Yeah, they are good. IT students.
And I would challenge
they're discussing.
You, I would challenge you a little bit because, and I hope Jay that you jump into it. What I can see with young people and what I hear from many of our guests in the podcast is that there is a too much. So I've heard from one guy. He said, "Well, your email inbox is a to-do list that someone else put together for you, and this is for every communication channel. It's for every meeting plan. It's for your agenda." Everyone wants something, and you have to react on this. And I think the new technology has brought a generation which is just reacting, just writing emails. And I think design thinking and coming back to using your pencil is a way to find spaces where you
it's work really hard and to not do that, just though. Answer I mean, emails. It's really, really hard to do that. I mean, we are slaves to our inbox, you're right. I mean, you have to be, I mean, hands up anybody who's not looked at their email for a week. Has anybody done that? I mean, I own my company. I still think I'm going to get fired. You know, we are in a terrible situation really where it's impossible to stop. It's also impossible not to put this point of view without sounding like a really old person. But I think, you know, we have to create environments where you can, as much as technology has liberated us and given us this geographical freedom to work wherever we want. It's kind of like invisible chains on your ankles, too. So we need to find a way of breaking that. And I think I'm actually quite intrigued by the concept of the hierarchy conversation, because in a way, some businesses can operate in that way. But I think architecture is actually one of those industries where it's really hard to break that concept of hierarchy because it's been built on it. And the amount of conversations I have when I'm doing reviews with architects at work about, I want to be an associate now, can I be an associate director? Well, I should be an associate director because the associate's been there, you know. It's like, fucking hell. Let's try and do something completely differently. But I don't quite know. I'd be really interested to talk later about this. I don't know how to break that down in an architecture studio. Yeah.
I have a very, very simple story. We started with rectangle tables. So rectangle tables, stand-up tables, 5-6 people. Some of you might know that. And we are using that for years for the students. And now we are training about 3,000 professionals. They work at the same environment. And so I was thinking that is the normal shape of a table. And then our friends in China, like that was 6-7 years ago, a university in China, they wanted to set up a D-school, and they were visiting us and they were starting cooperation and talks and they were looking at the furniture. And we were telling them furniture is a very important part because it makes people, gives them the chance to collaborate. And they were saying, oh, it's easy, we copy your furniture and then we build it in Beijing. And I was asking them, no, you probably can't do that, but I think, just think of your own culture. What would be a suitable table in China? And of course, they came up finally with a round table, with a circle. And yes, it has two floors like ours. Yes, it's a stand-up table. Yes, it's on wheels. And it fits 6 people. And when I came to Beijing, it was 6 years ago or so, when I came to Beijing, I had the kind of heureka moment, because I was thinking, wow, that I was remembered to when we do projects with professionals and there's the boss coming in that group and he's part of the team. Usually what happens is the boss is moving to the short part of the rectangle.
It's a hierarchy.
So,
and table. Yeah.
And I was looking at the circle and I was saying, oh, there's no chance for a hierarchical position. And I was immediately on the way back, I started already thinking about what is an interesting shape for us.
Can I just say one thing?
And then
there's one. If you're only 1.65 meters, there's a hierarchy when you stand up. I love sitting down.
I think there are solutions. We can talk.
You love sitting down.
Can I add something?
Just to end that. And then I was coming back and talking to Systemat80, the little company doing the furniture, and we were thinking of the form, which is not a circle. Circle is not, you know, this is if you put two circles together, you have holes, and so we want to groove it. And then we were sitting in a Buckminster Fuller dome somehow, and I was looking at the top, and the top was a hexagon, the center part, and I was saying, this is the table. This is the table we need. And so we built a prototype of the hexagon table, and the hexagon has six short ends. So every boss feels very comfortable because there's a short end. You know. And the other five feel like, oh, we are a part of a circle.
Yeah. They're all bosses. Yeah. Everyone's a boss.
Can I add something to what Jay said, that we're all slaves? I exaggerated a bit, slaves of technology, and we are afraid of not answering emails very quickly, et cetera. I think you're absolutely right. But I think this is because we all, more or less, were cultivated in an environment of command and control. We obey. We think it's necessary. But I think we're right now in a phase of change here. If we want self-organized people, if we want people to be able to prioritize their work, their decisions, their tasks, then command and control is over. And I think we have the problem that technology development and the cultural development of people, or the socialization in a different way, is not taking place parallelly. That's the problem at the moment. So yes, I think there is pressure for many people having been working for a couple of years now, maybe not as many years as you and I, but even a couple of years, that they have the impression they have to be available at any moment. But I think the younger generation, or the following generation, it's not even a biology age thing, they don't. They say, no, and now I'm working and now I'm not. And they can, because I have given them the power, I have empowered them to choose. And I mean, there's only one exception to the rule when you have to be available, and this is crisis. But there are not as many others necessities for you to be available at any moment.
But so maybe we should then all have like a you know, the I'm away on holiday thing, but you say, I'm sorry, I'm concentrating this week. Mm-hmm. If it's important, phone me.
Yeah, I mean, just think of how many topics that reach you are really that important that you need to answer them within 24 hours. So, I mean, even if, you know, for us, it's revolutionary to say, I answer emails once a day. Yeah. I mean, people are impressed when you say that, or I don't answer them at all, or only the day after, or whatever your philosophy is. But I think that's actually this strange period of changing times. You know, we have still our culture in our back, sort of our rucksack that we are carrying, and we think we need to obey, we need to be available. Technology gives us this opportunity to be available 24/7.
Yeah.
But we have to learn to become, again, I'd say adults, adults that can decide on their own.
I agree, but I also think the thing that we've seen at work as well, being old again, is how much technology enables you to hide behind it. So,
you know,
yeah, absolutely. So I get so frustrated at work when, for example, I can say to someone, please, can you speak to so-and-so about something? Right. So the next day I say, so what did so-and-so say? And the answer is, oh, they haven't emailed back yet. And I'm like, for Christ's sake,
you're sitting one phone desk next to you.
Phone them. No. It's just like, pick up the phone, right? If you want an instant response, phone people. Don't email the person to agree a time to phone. Phone. It's easy. So what we need to do is adjust ourselves back to the human, you know, rehumanize ourselves. And that's what this sofa system does so well. It brings everyone together.
But what I like about Lara's approach is you said you visited Tony Hirsch, is his name, I guess, the Zappos CEO. And he had, I think, a quite good explanation how new organizations should work or what should be their role model. And he said, we should more, and then we lead over to you, we should more organize a company like a city. And he says, why? Because cities, when they double their size, they get 15% more productivity and innovation. Companies that double their size usually go into the other direction. And he was asking himself, why is this so? And he said, well, in a city, people decide how to live alone, with a family, with kids, without kids, in a small flat. They buy, they share, they whatever. They decide whether they use the bus, Uber, or their own car. They, if they do a job or not, they have really tough decisions with high money behind it. And the same people come into the office, and they have three hierarchies who has to say, okay, if they want to do a trip to Berlin, which costs 150 euro. And he says, well, In a city, people, they have a framework, there's a governor, there's a system, they have rules, but they can decide, like you said, your teams, your circles can decide on their topics. And I think even in your industry, to build a house 50 years ago compared to now is so different. If you have, you want to have, which is energy neutral, I doubt that you can decide which is the right system to do, because it's not your profession. And so I think we all have to learn, and that's why I like your approach so much. We're not in the position to lead a company from the top to the bottom. We have to lead it from the outside to the inside. So clients, expectations, knowledge. And there's no such thing like Taylor principle anymore, that there's one old white-haired or no-haired guy who knows everything and the rest has to do it. There are many people with many expertise, and the task is to orchestrate it. And that's what I understand from you. You are now the you give the surrounding.
I'm the conductor, more or less. I deliver the framework so everyone can develop. I mean, that sounds, of course, very nice. I mean, we're having hard times, I can tell you, because it's not so easy to change patterns. Patterns are very, very strong, but we really try, and we. I think you have to be generous with yourself and with your staff. And but I have, maybe that sounds a bit pathetic, but I do believe very strongly in people wanting to act as adults and to be treated like adults. I don't want other people to take decisions in my profession, because I think I'm the best doing that. And if I'm not, yes, maybe then I, you know, make a wrong decision. But in how many cases, that's really a huge problem, and I learn, and I can do that in my private life, as you said. In my private life, I can arrange my, you know, I live a life. I I can have a house, I can have kids, I travel, I have insurances, I whatever I can do. And most people, I think, do quite a good job in that. And as soon as you enter your company or your office, other people tell you what to do. For me, this is really a crazy thought.
Yeah, for me as well. I think it's really funny that we always talk about change in work, but in the people's mind, and most of the people's minds, it's still you change from one working system to the other system, to another working system. But work itself,
it's a mindset.
It's the point. Because if we, it's very easy for us as humans to change to our human and social system, because we all have this in us, no? That's how we are. That's how we behave as human beings and as social beings. And everyone knows that. Everyone knows how to behave in a family and in a group of friends and wherever. But when it comes to work, it's always in our mindset that these are two
different
organizations.
Yeah.
So this is also what
that's interesting. So people are always talking about in terms, let's say Vitra, you know, this crossover between home and work. In terms of the infrastructure, the furniture, the building, saying also it's an adjustment as it on a sort of humanistic way or on a societal way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we need to adapt.
I think we should, if we do just one thing, is to focus on life itself. Mm. This is why I invented this term social texture, because if we just start with a social, we are very comfortable and we really know how to behave and how to act and how to take decisions. And that's also why I found it, yes, on the basis of how we work as social beings. So our company, it's a company, yes, okay, but it's also, it's a network, but it's also like a social, it's like an ecosystem.
Yeah.
and it just lives. And
in a group,
it works.
You have different talents. Not everyone has to have the same talents, but different ones. And
that's the point. Yeah,
can I ask, because I mentioned before the architecture studio, and I think a lot of you are architects, and I imagine you are, and you know all the trouble that comes with being an architect. Could you imagine the way that you guys are talking, applying to, could you go into an architecture studio which has the kind of principles and then the sort of hierarchy and then these problems and these projects? Could it work for these guys?
Do you think it has to change?
I think it would be fantastic. I'm really excited about what you're talking about, but I can't see how to implement it.
Well, actually, I did it because I come from, I'm an architect, and I always worked in architecture studios.
What are you doing tomorrow?
What are you doing tomorrow?
I think you have to show the structure that it's a necessity to change. If it's not, then they will not. But if you really see the pros in it, then people will change or structures will change. Mm. Maybe not from now to tomorrow, but if you become faster, more efficient, more profitable, then that's,
Interesting.
I think that is really a crucial point. There was also another Heureka moment in my life. There was the one thing was to see that our tables are conditioning something, and then there is a way to get rid of that. And the other thing was, I think it was 3 years ago when it was first time visiting the camp in south of France. I'm not sure if you know about that. It's a new place. I think it's up and running since 3 or 4 years now. And it was the first time I was coming into that thing close to Aix-en-Provence in the countryside somewhere. It's a structure where people can work, live, learn, experiment. It's a huge lab for several hundred people. I came into that thing and it was the first moment that I was saying, that's the first time that I see an architecture which is built for the work we are doing. And then I thought of those spaces we are having the D schools in. D school Stanford is a hacked space, a hacked architecture on the campus in Stanford. D school Potsdam is a hacked office space. It's hacked. All the D schools, all the environments, all the design thinking places, the learning places, they are all in hacked environments. And I was not really thinking about that because we were so happy. Yes, we have the furniture and we can work, but we need the architecture. We need the architects to really rethink the way how work is hosted and how furniture is the step, but that is the first step. And now we need to really fundamentally rethink the way how we structure buildings. And maybe Franziska can talk about that because you have experienced, you are this Zalando and you're just sitting there and maybe you're there's.
You have to come here because otherwise no one.
And it was, for me, it was such an interesting experience. Like, when was that, last year?
We're so diverse.
when I got the chance to be a part of that opening of Zalando headquarters in Berlin, which was there were architects taken care of intensively, but I had still the feeling there's something missing. There's a little bit of too old thinking. Is that right? Are you there?
What's your story?
Start with architecture is very slow. So you start with a project, for example, the Zalando.
Is the microphone working?
Oh, sorry.
Is it working?
Yeah. No.
Can you turn it on?
Red button on the, but it's glowing.
No?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we, it's just like a building. It needs so much time and planning. The planning phase is so long. So we start with the headquarter of Zalando in 2012, so 7 years ago, and it opened in April this year. So
last year.
Mm-hmm. So this is a very, very long phase where you have to decide things you cannot think about today. So when they started to think about things, everything changed so fast, so it's not in the same level.
And did you have a chance to adjust on the way?
You're not, because...
Oh, you're not?
Yeah, you're not really, because in this case, We are just attenders, so we can only.
Yes.
We will. In the beginning, we had the chance in the construction phase, on the planning phase, we had the chance to give our opinion on it. But also, Zalando was not there where we are today because they were not really thinking or viewing with the eyes of the user. Mm-hmm. We had the team of the construction development team is like they are all architects, so there we are, but normal architects, just really normal thinking architects and not design thinker. And this is a change we had at Zalando, a very, very huge change or big change that we found out that it's really important to talk with the user and to find out
and
what
this is so great about
surprise.
and the interesting thing was that you are design thinker.
But we started 2 years ago, a new work team that comes from the inside of Zalando. So because we found out that it's not possible to work like that or to proceed like this, we have to talk with the user. And that's why we started the new work team where we do workshops and everything with the Zalando people, with the Zalandos. And because we are very diverse, we have techies, we have fashion people, and we have sort of super normal people like working like every other person. And this is what you need to combine in a building, in a working environment. And this is more or less a mission impossible when you don't have the building and you don't have the furniture for it. And there's no architect who can have it. We work with Kinso and they are amazing. They did a very, very great job. But it's just a part of it. And then you have the whole workplace and there you have to change so much. This is
but I think what you just said is one of our greatest flaws. And I said that before, we are not used to asking. And that's about customer centricity just as much as management. We have learned to give answers as managers or project managers, whatever it is. And asking is not in our DNA yet.
No.
Not again. And I'm just so sad. I wonder how many ideas are not being born because of your structures in your industry.
Yeah, and of course, the other thing is that, you know, the other thing that happens in when you create hierarchy is that you turn somebody who's doing architecture or design because they're good at drawing and having good ideas, and you turn them into managers who are shit managers. Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing about hierarchy that I would like to break down and get them drawing again. I don't know how, but we should. Anyway.
We will meet again. Maybe we come now to this aspect of the building is important, the way of working is important, but if you want to attract young talent, the city, the region, the quarter is. So, what is your perspective on this? You said Hammerbrook, but we all call it Hammer Brooklyn now.
Hammerbrook is where our studio is. Hammer Brooklyn is something else.
Yeah, I know. But so, what is your perspective on this? How important is the city for this aspect of new work? So, you use the city. Explain it a little.
Yeah, exactly. So, first of all, I think the most important thing are the people. Really, the people. And the people make a culture. And the culture makes a place at the end. And then the spaces and everything that we create as architects that serve as a framework, like what you're doing in management, that's what architecture does for the culture. And in this sense, the city is very, very important. I mean, the city compared, cities are also in kind of a competition to attract talent and to attract people. But once you have a very attractive city like Hamburg, it's important to create places where people really want to spend their day. Because, we have the chance. And what we offer or what we did in the last decades, we built a lot of monotonous office blocks or office streets or
prisons. Like Potsdamer Platz or
we call it office.
City,
no?
Yeah, whatever.
And it's work and schnapps is schnapps.
Yeah, exactly. It is, and now we really, it's so hard to work against it now. For example, Hammerbrook, everyone knows City Süd, it's really dead after 6 o'clock. So, and now it takes so much effort to change that, to bring life in that. So when we build new places, this is the most important thing. I think we should definitely start with the people and ask the questions, how can we make sure that people will be there and will love this place and will go there and will do there something throughout the day, throughout the year, throughout many, many years. And then it's so important how the architecture is made of. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to make a very radical proposition that mm-hmm. I think we do not need office buildings anymore. Really?
Wow.
So the office is dead.
The office is dead, yeah. Building is dead. The
building is dead.
Yeah.
The office.
I'm really happy to hear that.
So make this a little bit more visible. So what is, let's say, you have the possibility to create a totally new quarter in a
yeah.
like this, like we this wanted to have Olympic City. Now there's this island which will not be Olympic City. What would you do there? How would you show us that there's no, what is instead of the office building, is there? What is it?
Instead of the office buildings, yeah, there are, it's more like a framework, mm-hmm. which can serve any kind of life. I mean, take this hall, mm-hmm. this Vitral, it's really super. I think it was a kind of a workshop here or a car workshop some years back, perfectly fine for that. Now Vitra is here, super. I mean, it's a great space. It had a perfect atmosphere. I think we all feel very comfortable today. And then in 10 years, it's something else. I could also easily imagine to live here.
Same with me.
Also with yeah. this.
Can you live this stuff here?
Maybe need some more sofas.
Yeah. Maybe yeah. a bed. Yeah.
Our beds. But this is a very... yep. space that is so neutral to the use, and the more specific a place is, like specifically made for a school or specifically made for a hospital or specifically made for an office, you can just do only this.
Okay.
And so I think we need to think about city and buildings more in this direction. Mm-hmm. And this now maybe may seem or sound very logical or very easy. It's just when we look back and look what we do now and when we take a look what we built, no? Even also Zalando, it's a typical office building at the end. We now have to come to a new time where we really have to think different about this kind of buildings.
So I think that's happening. I mean, I see that happening in London, because, you know, London had this moment where it was densely populated with lots of shops and some kind of office buildings. And then, you know, after the Second World War, people went like mm-hmm. that and emptied. And in the 70s and 80s, it was empty, you know, and you could squat a whole house in Notting Hill. And then it's gone back in again. And in the 80s, saw these, and 80s, 90s, and 2000s, these high rises. Mm-hmm. But actually, what's happening is things are just becoming residential again. And then there's this whole live work concept. So then you live and you work in the same place, and the shops are becoming apartments again. Everything is becoming apartments. But what we're crying out for is like the covered space of the medieval town, where people gather to shop, to talk, to, work, I don't know, but now work. So maybe we need a kind of a new paradigm of those mm-hmm. spaces. Because at the moment, we're making do of spaces which aren't quite right. You know, as I said, the hotel lobby, which is fine if you've got soft work, but and the coffee shop. And,
he's a good salesperson as well.
By the way, everyone has to buy one before you leave. at least a Tipton chair. And so maybe that's
we
what we
discount.
Need.
Yeah,
like
definitely.
We need to redesign yeah. the city in that
exactly.
way.
Exactly, and I think we should design it like the way we design interior spaces. Mm. This is what interests me. I was always fascinated by creating spaces and making spaces for people.
Yeah,
and I did it for several years, almost 20 years, and lots of them were interior spaces and furnishing them and make sure that people feel very well. But we now have a lack of doing urban spaces with this kind of quality.
But I
and
think
that's what yes is.
Actually,
what we
that
do
goes.
Now.
Sorry, I think still this goes hand in hand with the current generation of bosses, since you know we have office buildings because people are frightened that people don't work, their people, their employees, if they don't control them. So they want them to come there, you know, come in and soon then they, I think really we have to get used to enjoy losing control. And as long as those people are still in power, sorry, that sounds a bit revolutionary. I'm not I'm meaning that really, but this is why offices look like mm-hmm. they do, because work is not supposed to be fun.
I also
you get money
another,
for that,
yeah.
so it has to be hard, yeah. and it's really a mindset change we're at the moment experiencing, I think.
That's true.
I don't know whether...
But it's, yeah, it's also a matter of how you are accustomed to do things, to perceive things. And I figured out that, or I observed that people who are in charge and take decisions for building office buildings, they just... are used to think of office buildings, so they do not think of anything
else.
It's just what they are, what they are used to be, and that's why I think the design thinking method comes into play. And this is also how we approach concepts: is we do not only design the spaces, but we design the process with all the participants to really get into this mindset. So. We design a process where we take in people from the city, real estate developers, people who are more, I don't know, come from medicine and know how brains work, and from really, really completely different perspectives and disciplines. And together we create a process, and then it turns out that the mind changes, and it's just getting a different perspective. And then the result is also different. But sometimes it starts that people just do what they used to do.
Patterns.
But it's not they don't. It's not a bad intention. It's just they never thought about it, thinking in another direction.
Yeah, we are conditioned in that way.
Yeah.
And I was happy to hear from your education field. I was thinking, okay, you are talking about education, that the kids are experiencing lots of collaboration. I have an 11-year-old son in school in Berlin, normal school. He doesn't really experience collaboration yet. And this is the majority of kids nowadays is still in an environment and learning to compete with the neighbor, to hate the neighbor, because they have to be better than their neighbor. And this is the complete opposite of what we need. So I think there is a big necessity to change our education system, our learning system, to make people, to kind of not condition them in the wrong way, but have them experience the same thing that you are doing, what we are doing in the School of Design Thinking. All people, and this is what I call de-assholizing, you know. We
I like that word. I love names, especially like
I came up with that because I found out that after a semester or so, they come in, of course, our students, they are trained to be assholes, you know. They're trained to be better than the others. And so at the first weeks, they are still behaving like this. And then all of a sudden, they figure out, oh, they are not looking at myself. They are looking at the team performance, and they're looking at the outcome. And they're not even grading. They're not even measuring. There's no grades at the D school on purpose, of course. There's no individual measurement. And then they figure that out. And all of a sudden, after they've realized that, then all of a sudden they think, oh, well, I can do crazy things. You know, I'll not be punished by someone. And then it's the interesting moment, because then the flow starts. Then their energy comes out of their brain. Then they allow things to do which they would never allow themselves to do. And the same thing we are experiencing also in companies and organizations. If you move towards that process, that openness, and you do what Bosch did in 2016, get rid of individual bonus, get rid of individual target agreements, get rid of that old traditional 19th, 20th century bullshit. If you do that, then all of a sudden you start a fully new environment of creativity. And that helps people.
Exactly.
To live,
yeah,
not just to work.
Thank you. Yeah, come on. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Bye.